Sea of Tranquility by Emily St. John Mandel. Read for you by John Lee, Dylan Moore, Arthur Morey, and Kirsten Potter.
Part 1. Remittance. 1912. 1. Edwin St. John St. Andrew, 18 years old, hauling the weight of his double-sainted name across the Atlantic by steamship, eyes narrowed against the wind on the upper deck. He holds the railing with gloved hands, impatient for a glimpse of the unknown, trying to discern something, anything, beyond sea and sky, but all he sees are shades of endless grey. He's on his way to a different world. He's more or less at the halfway point between England and Canada. "I have been sent into exile," he tells himself, and he knows he's being melodramatic, but nonetheless there's a ring of truth to it. Edwin's ancestors include William the Conqueror. When Edwin's grandfather dies, his father will become an earl, and Edwin went to two of the best schools in the country. But there was never much of a future for him back in England. There are very few professions that a gentleman can take up, and none of them are of interest to Edwin. The family estate is destined to go to his oldest brother, Gilbert, so he stands to inherit nothing. The middle brother, Niall, is in Australia already. Edwin might have clung to England a little longer, but he holds secretly radical views, which emerged unexpectedly at a dinner party, thus speeding up his fate. In a flash of wild optimism, Edwin has his occupation recorded as farmer on the ship's manifest. It occurs to him later, in a contemplative moment out on deck, that he's never so much as touched a spade. 2. In Halifax, he finds lodging by the port, a boarding house where he's able to secure a corner room on the second floor, overlooking the harbour. He wakes that first morning to a wonderfully lively scene outside his window. A large merchant ship has arrived, and he's close enough to hear the jovial curses of the men unloading barrels and sacks and crates. He spends much of that first day gazing out the window, like a cat. He planned to go west immediately, but it's so easy to linger in Halifax, where he falls prey to a personal weakness he's been aware of all his life. Edwin is capable of action, but prone to inertia. He likes sitting by his window. There's a constant movement of people and ships. He doesn't want to leave, so he stays. "Oh, just trying to puzzle out my next move, I suppose," he says to the proprietor, when she makes gentle inquiries. Her name is Mrs. Donnelly. She's from Newfoundland. Her accent confounds him. She sounds like she's from Bristol and also from Ireland, simultaneously. But then sometimes he hears Scotland. The rooms are clean and she's an excellent cook. Sailors pass by his window in jostling waves. They rarely look up. He enjoys watching them but dares not make any movement toward them. Besides, they have each other. When drunk, they put their arms around one another's shoulders and he feels a piercing envy. Could he go to sea? Of course not. He discards the idea as soon as it arises. He once heard of a remittance man who reinvented himself as a sailor, but Edwin's a man of leisure through and through. He loves watching the boats come in, steamships pulling into the harbour with an aura of Europe still clinging to their decks. He takes walks in the mornings and again in the afternoons, down to the harbour, out to quiet residential areas, in and out of little shops under the striped awnings on Barrington Street. He likes to ride the electric streetcar to the end of the line, and then come back, watching the shift from small houses to larger houses to the commercial buildings downtown. He likes buying things that he doesn't especially need. A loaf of bread, a postcard or two, a bouquet of flowers. This could be a life, he finds himself thinking. It could be as simple as this. No family, no job, just a few simple pleasures and clean sheets to fall into at the end of the day, a regular allowance.